Terms of Payment by Corgi Girl, read by Jadesfar. Because Jack understood certain habits peculiar to those who can't die, he knew that Owen wasn't sleeping. He also knew Owen was looking for answers, so he wasn't surprised when, one morning long before the others arrived for work, Owen turned up and asked him a question. "What happened to that little girl the priest brought back from the dead?" Owen asked. He leaned on the doorway to Jack's office in the hip-shot casual pose that was second nature to the old Owen. In this new incarnation, Jack had the feeling much of Owen's armour was crumbling away, and he had to struggle to imitate who he'd been before. "I don't know," Jack said. "There's no record." "I've looked," Owen said, and he hesitated. "So have I. She disappeared," Jack replied. He knew what probably happened. When you didn't seem to age, when accidents that would kill another didn't even stun you, you have to move on before people notice, before you become a victim of the cruel curiosity of humans. If faith, like Owen, could not heal from wounds, then it would have been even more imperative that she stayed hidden away, off the record for all time. "Yeah, well," Owen said and walked away. Jack knew what it was like to be unable to hate the person who resurrected you, no matter how much you may want to. Living is a hard habit to break, no matter how tiresome it becomes. The slight distance Owen held him at now was understandable. Owen, he knew, wanted facts, not pity or maudlin heart-to-heart talks about any similarities in their conditions. For facts, there was a source that wasn't on Google or buried in dusty church records that ended with the death of an old priest in the country parish. It was one Jack didn't like to consult unless the need was literally a matter of life or death. This, he thought, definitely qualified. Some hours later, after Yanto appeared with coffee and Gwen and Tosh had teamed up to work through the night's record of rift activity, Jack leaned on the railing over the morgue theatre and watched Owen for a while. He sat hunched on a stool at a table, stacks of files before him. Since what had happened, and Jack still wasn't sure what to call it, since being dragged back from death was far different from came back in the intent covered by a verb, he'd been more diligent than usual about making sure everything was done properly. The files and records were up to date, the medical supplies inventoried, the first aid kits freshly stocked, and he'd generated numerous reports that all began with "in case of," so that they'd know what to do when he was gone. If he was ever gone, Jack thought. Owen liked facts. He didn't deal well with uncertainty. "I owe you this," Jack whispered, and in the vast space around them, the words went unheard. The girl, Jack knew, would be found only when she wanted to be. She'd been alive a long time, possibly longer than he had, and she'd become canny in a way that people with an ordinary lifespan couldn't begin to fathom. Tonight, he thought, he must have been sending off the right signals, because she appeared at his table, the cards in her left hand, after he'd been nursing a glass of water for less than an hour. She wore a cloak like Little Red Riding Hood's, but he knew the fairy tale image was an illusion. She looked like a child, but he didn't think she'd ever been one, at least not on this planet. "You desire to know the future?" she asked. Her eyes were dark in the room's low light, as if all the colour in them had been extinguished. "Ultimately," Jack said. "But first I need to know the past. I'm trying to find someone who was lost a long time ago." He reached for his vest pocket, and a man stepped out of the shadows toward them. "I know him," she said, raising her voice just enough to be heard, and her bodyguard stepped back. "That's new," Jack said. The guard's hand was on his coat pocket. She shrugged ever so slightly. "Times change," she said. "Not everyone has your good manners, Captain Harkness." She glanced at his hand, which had stilled in mid-air between the tabletop and his vest. "Continue. Show me." He pulled out the copy of the woodcut of death and the material Gwen had found. She glanced at it, her eyes flicking quickly from one line to the next. She pushed the pages back across the table and let her hand rest on the cards. "I am not Faith," she said quickly.
"I wouldn't insult you by asking that," he said.
"How kind of you," she said. "And you are correct. I do know what became of her. For that I do not need the cards." She looked up. "The last time we met, I told you the location of a certain object."
"Yes," Jack said, "and I found it."
"You used it," she said, "and now there are consequences to be dealt with."
"There always are," he said.
"Words won't repay your debt," she answered. "They're all I have," Jack replied. His throat was dry, but he would not offend her by drinking in her presence.
"My friend needs to know what will happen to him."
She folded her hands and looked down at them. "You believe the past reveals the future. You have great faith in time, Captain."
"I have to," he said. "I seem to have so much of it. Got to work with my resources."
His charm had never worked on her, but he couldn't stop himself from trying. It was his own second nature, just like Owen's callous bravado. It was something they both fell back on when the going got rough. She looked away. "What became of her is this. She lived for many years with religious orders, moving from one to another every few years. Because she did not grow older, it was necessary to protect her identity. She received a new name and family history with every move. So you may find her in the records, but you won't recognize her."
"My friend," Jack said, "his body doesn't heal itself. Was this also true of Faith?"
"Yes," she said. "She became rather shopworn." There was an amused glint in the girl's eyes at her turn of phrase. "The nuns, who were sworn to secrecy about her, explained that she was fragile, easily hurt and slow to heal to anyone who noticed. That religious women are often quite adept at needlework became something of an asset to keeping her in one piece." She looked back at him. "You're a little pale tonight, Captain Harkness."
"My conscience is bothering me," he said.
"So it should, but that's beyond my control." Her hand, moving almost of its own accord, fanned out the cards on the tabletop. In the back of the room, Jack could hear people moving about, talking in low voices, the clink of glasses and the snap of the fire in the room's old fireplace. He wondered if most of them had any idea what they were sharing this space with.
"You're speaking of her in the past tense," Jack said. "Something finally ended her?"
"An excellent way to put it," the girl said, "since she was neither dead nor alive." She swept up the cards and tapped them sharply on the table to square up the deck. "The bombing in the war did it. There was a terrible fire, and she did not escape it."
"So something that obliterates the body releases the person's existence?"
"I have no idea what became of her consciousness," she said. "The current form of religion would have us believe death is a doorway. It is not. It's more of a corridor connecting two states of being. Whether she passed fully through it, I can't say. I know she's not here. She is not a ghost. That I can say with certainty." She put the deck down on the table and rested her index finger on it. "Do you still wish to know the future?"
"Not tonight," he said.
"You haven't asked me what it was like for her."
The girl's gaze was steady on his. There was a stillness, a kind of coldness in her that never changed. 600 years like that," Jack said. "I think I can imagine."
"Some things are worse than you can imagine," she said quietly. "Time can make one quite mad."
"I know," he replied.
She didn't answer,
and for a moment he had the sensation that time had slowed down around them, as if each second was stretched out to a breaking point. "Last call, Captain," she suddenly said. She sat up straighter, as if she was shaking off some private reverie. "Will the past suffice?"
"It's enough," he said. "Thank you."
She slipped the cards off the table and tucked her hands inside her cloak. "Consider this a professional courtesy," she said. "No payment owed."
"I greatly appreciate that," he said.
"As long as we understand each other," she said. She inclined her head slightly, a movement as regal as a queen's, and rose from her seat. Jack stood as a sign of courtesy, and she moved a few steps away. She suddenly turned back, and Jack straightened up where he stood. "You destroyed the glove," she said.
"Yes," he said. With her, there was no point in lies or in rationalizing any action or behavior.
He'd always suspected the tarot cards were simply a smokescreen for her, a way that humans could accept what she could do. He was fairly certain she could read time like an open book. "It would be best not to ask where the others are," she said. She paused and seemed to look right through him. "You wouldn't like what they can do."
With that, she turned and walked away. The man in the shadows stepped out and fell into position behind her. Within an instant, they melted into the crowd around the bar and were gone. Jack picked up his glass and drained it dry. It was not the drink he wanted, but it would do for the moment.
"I have it on excellent medical advice that it's bad to drink alone," Owen said from the doorway of his office. It was long past midnight when even Tosh had finally packed up and gone home for the night.
"It's worse for me to get chatty in bars. All kinds of things follow me home," Jack said. He lifted the decanter and topped up his glass again.
"I'd offer you one, but I've seen what you do with beer. It'd be a crime to do that to 18-year-old Scotch."
"Just a nip, then," Owen said, and Jack splashed a finger of the whiskey into a clean glass. Owen took it and sat down. He dipped in a fingertip and touched it to his tongue.
"Tastes like paint thinner," he said.
"Really?" Jack said. He was just a little bit drunk. Not as much as he wanted to be, but enough that he'd regret it in the morning if he drank much more.
"And how does one develop a palate for turpentine?"
"Don't ask," Owen said, but his cocky smile slipped a little as he did. He set the glass down on the edge of the desk.
"Actually, it doesn't taste like anything. Things, my senses, fading away. Guess it's logical. If you have no need to eat, why should flavours matter?"
Jack took another sip of his drink. "Does pretending help?" Owen looked down at his bandaged hand.
"Not really, but I don't know what else to do."
He looked up. "Got any ideas, Jack?"
"What am I supposed to tell you?" Jack wondered. "That you can blow yourself up or immolate yourself and this might be over? But that I have no idea where you'll wind up?"
He couldn't do that. There weren't enough facts to justify tearing away any more of Owen's defences.
"Keep on keeping on," he said at last. "Try to make sure you don't get banged up."
"Right," Owen said. He held up his hand. "Superglue's far superior to stitches, by the way," he said. "Turns out Yanto built lots of models when he was a kid."
"Airplanes?"
"Cars," Owen said. "He likes cars."
"I didn't know," Jack said.
"You should ask him," Owen said. "Might be good to know these things about people, what they like and dislike." He stood up, picked up his glass and set it in front of Jack.
"Why don't you have that one for me?"
"Owen, I'm sorry," Jack said, but Owen waved his hand to hush him.
"Don't," he said.
"I know, but there's nothing we can do about it, so give yourself a nasty hangover and consider it payback."
"That's it," Jack said. "That's all you want?"
"It'll have to suffice, won't it?" Owen said, and Jack felt the hairs on his neck stand up.
"I can do that," he said.
His palms were suddenly sweaty, and he hoped his face wasn't giving anything away. He knew he hadn't been followed, and the place where he'd met the girl didn't let strangers in, but the echo of her words in Owen's mouth was unnerving. Owen stopped in the doorway and glanced back over his shoulder.
"It's only fair to warn you. I'll be cleaning and oiling all the morgue drawers today. Lots of banging and crashing around about 10 a.m.
"Gotcha," Owen said. He picked up the glass and downed the shot in one burning swallow as Owen walked away. Outside his office, he heard the door grind open as Owen left for the remainder of the night. The hub's lights, set to automatic by Tosh, dimmed when the door closed behind him. The decanter on his desk was still 3/4 full, so Jack had some ground to cover before morning came. He poured the next glass.
"To keeping on," he said, and lifted his glass to the darkness around him.